All right, Clifford, we're back for a mini episode here.
Indeed we are.
Okay. How about I just explain what we're doing, because I didn't really fill you in fully.
Okay.
So what we're going to do here is we're circling back to the part that I said we would cover because it was awesome. It's one of the hallmarks of doing the show is that you dive into passages like this. We're going back to the Window of the West chapter, which famously I picked somehow as my favorite chapter in Two Towers. I'm still surprised by this, but that is what I did. So anyways, there was this, the one part, because it was a really long episode. It was one of those, everything in book four is actually relatively manageable or even short episodes, except this one. Because they meet Faramir. He's telling them all about Boromir. We're seeing how good a guy Faramir is. He's talking about Gondor and the situation, everything. And then after dinner, they do the grace thing and we have that huge conversation about religion and stuff. I mean, it's like, this was a jam-packed chapter. And the part that we had to just cut, I said it was a bridge too far, we couldn't do it tonight, was Faramir goes on this three-page, not really rant, but three-page, what would you call it? Dialogue? Not dialogue, because it's just one, but
monologue?
Monologue? Yeah, sure. Three-page monologue. Aside,
maybe?
Yeah, or, man, what's a better, whatever, I'm not going to think of a word. Anyways, he goes on a three-page something, and he's just doing broad strokes, sweeping history of not just even Gondor, but all men. And so, obviously, we have to read it. Obviously, we got to talk about it. We got to talk about it in the context of the story. How does this make us feel with the chapter? How are we supposed to feel? What is this supposed to make us feel or think or wonder about? And then we got to dive into the nitty gritty, which is what's he referring to and stuff. Mm-hmm. And this actually will be a spark of, basically, he kind of touches on everything that I feel like we just need a few special episodes before we start the Return of the King to properly understand what we're getting into when we start Return of the King, the last book of Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
we
boy.
I'll explain afterwards. Let's just jump in.
Okay.
So, I'll start. You're going to be Faramir because you're more like him than me.
Okay.
So, I'll be the hobbits or whatever.
Why, thank
you. I'll start. Yeah, you're going to be reading most of it. So, anyways, I'll start. So, remember, this is after dinner. Faramir and Sam and Frodo are sitting on the side in a little cove thing. And they, the beautiful waterfall with the moon striking through it is sitting out there, And all the other men are just hanging out by themselves or something. I don't know. They're not hanging out with Faramir because Faramir's alone with just Frodo and Sam. So, Frodo told many tales, yet always he steered the matter away from the quest of the company and from the ring, enlarging rather on the valiant part Boromir had played in all their adventures, with the wolves of the wild, and the snows under Carathos, and in the mines of Moria where Gandalf fell. Faramir was most moved by the story of the fight on the bridge.
It must have irked Boromir to run from orcs, he said, or even from the fell thing you name, the Balrog, even though he was the last to leave.
He was the last, said Frodo, but Aragorn was forced to lead us. He alone knew the way after Gandalf's fall. But had there not been us lesser folk to care for, I do not think either he or Boromir would have fled.
Maybe. It would have been better had Boromir fallen there with Mithrandir, said Faramir, and not gone on to the fate that waited above the falls of Rauros.
Maybe. But tell me now of your own fortunes, said Frodo, turning the matter aside once again, for I would learn more of Minas Ithil and Osgiliath, and Minas Tirith the Long Enduring. What hope have you for that city in your long war?
What hope have we, said Faramir? It is long since we had any hope. The sword of Elendil, if indeed it returns, may rekindle it, but I do not think that it will do more than put off the evil day, unless other help unlooked for also comes, from elves or men. For the enemy increases, and we decrease. We are a failing people, a springless autumn. The men of Numenor were settled far and wide on the shores and seaward regions of the great lands, but for the most part they fell into evils and follies. Many became enamored of the darkness and the black arts. Some were given over wholly to idleness and ease, and some fought amongst themselves, until they were conquered in their weakness by the wild men. It is not said that evil arts were ever practiced in Gondor, or that the Nameless One was ever named in honor there, and the old wisdom and beauty brought out of the West remained long in the realm of the sons of Elendil the Fair, and they linger there still. Yet even so it was Gondor that brought about its own decay, falling by degrees into dotage, and thinking that the enemy was asleep, who was only banished, not destroyed. Death was ever present, because the Numenorians still, as they had in their old kingdom, and so lost it, hungered after endless life unchanging. Kings made tombs more splendid than houses of the living, and counted old names in the rolls of their descent dearer than the names of sons. Childless lords sat in aged halls, musing on heraldry. In secret chambers, withered men compounding strong elixirs, or in high cold towers, asked questions of the stars. And the last king of the line of Anarion had no heir. But the stewards were wiser and more fortunate. Wiser, for they recruited the strength of our people from the sturdy folk of the seacoast, and from the hardy mountaineers of arid Nimrais. And they made a truce with the proud peoples of the north, who often assailed us, men of fierce valor, but our kin from afar off, unlike the wild Easterlings or the cruel Haradrim. So it came to pass, in the days of Cirion the 12th Steward, and my father is the 6th and 20th, that they rode to our aid, and at the great field of Celebrant they destroyed our enemies that had seized our northern provinces. These are the Rohirrim, as we named them, masters of horses, and we ceded to them the fields of Calanardharan, that are since called Rohan, for that province has long been sparsely peopled. And they have become our allies, and have ever proved true to us, aiding us at need and guarding our northern marches and the gap of Rohan. Of our lore and matters they have learned what they would, and their lords speak our speech at need. Yet for the most part they hold by the ways of their own fathers and to their own memories, and they speak among themselves in their own north tongue. We love them, tall men and fair women, valiant both alike, golden-haired, bright-eyed, and strong. They remind us of the youth of men, as they were in elder days. Indeed, it is said by our lore masters that they have from of old this affinity with us, that they are come from those same three houses of men, as were the Numenorians in the beginning. Not from Hador, the golden-haired, the elf-friend, maybe, yet from such of his sons and people as went not over the sea into the west, refusing the call. For so we reckon men in our lore, calling them the High, or men of the west, which were the Numenorians, and the middle peoples, men of twilight, such are the Rohirrim and their kin that dwell still far in the north, and the wild, the men of darkness. Yet now, if the Rohirrim are grown in some ways more like to us, enhanced in arts and gentleness, we too have become more like to them, and can scarce claim any longer the title High. We are become middlemen of the twilight, but with memory of other things. For as the Rohirrim do, we now love war and valor as things good in themselves, both a sport and an end. And though we still hold that a warrior should have more skills and knowledge than only the craft of weapons and slaying, we esteem a warrior, nonetheless, above men of other crafts. Such is the need of our days. So even was my brother, Boromir, a man of prowess, and for that he was accounted the best man in Gondor. And very valiant indeed he was. No heir of Minas Tirith has for long years been so hardy in toil, so onward into battle, or blown a mightier note on the great horn. Faramir sighed and fell silent for a while.
"You don't say much in all your tales about elves, sir," said Sam, suddenly plucking up his courage. He had noted that Faramir seemed to refer to elves with reverence, and this even more than his courtesy and his food and wine had won Sam's respect and quieted his suspicions.
"No, indeed, Master Samwise," said Faramir, "for I am not learned in elven lore. But there you touch upon another point in which we have changed, declining from Numenor to Middle-earth. For as you may know, if Mithrandir was your companion, and you have spoken with Elrond, the Eldain, the fathers of the Numenorians, fought beside the elves in the first wars, and were rewarded by the gift of the kingdom in the midst of the sea, within sight of Elvenhome. But in Middle-earth, men and elves became estranged in the days of darkness by the arts of the enemy, and by the slow changes of time in which each kind walked further down their sundered roads. Men now fear and misdoubt the elves, and yet know little of them. And we of Gondor grow like other men, like the men of Rohan. For even they, who are foes of the Dark Lord, shun the elves and speak of the Golden Wood with dread. Yet there are among us still some who have dealings with the elves, when they may. And ever and anon one will go in secret to Lorien, seldom to return. Not I, for I deem it perilous now for mortal man willfully to seek out the elder people. Yet I envy you that you have spoken with the White Lady.
The Lady of Lorien, Galadriel, cried Sam. And this is where we picked it up again. And Sam, you know, starts mouthing off about the elves and everything. And then he gets into Boromir and then he accidentally lets out the secret that Boromir was trying to get the ring, as Frodo had been spending all chapter guarding it super closely from Faramir.
Right. But that was a huge section.
Yeah.
Whatever we're calling it, a monologue from Faramir just about the history of his people. More than we've gotten about the history of men probably at any other point in Lord of the Rings.
Correct. So feelings first, what do we think of that?
As a very general sensation, it reminds me a lot of what we've talked about with the elves. This sensation of time passing, inevitable change, and not quite dying, but passing out of this world.
Like heyday's over.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I feel like
Twilight. It's sort of beautiful at the same time that it's really sad. So it brings to mind the dusk after Twilight, where the light is really beautiful, but it's this unstoppable end of things.
But it's not as severe as with the elves. Like, the elves are a real twilight that's unstoppable. Men, theoretically, you know, like Aragorn, he's going to Gondor. It's not like he thinks, Gondor's done, you know.
But from Faramir's standpoint, he doesn't know,
he doesn't know about Aragorn.
And he's also, he's saying, not men in general, but specifically these Numenoreans that he descends from or is related to in some way, they sound a lot like the elves to me.
What do you think of this comparison? How close does it feel like to, remember the movie Cars, and they're in Radiator Springs and it's on Route 66 and, you know, it's well past its heyday because Route 66 isn't popular since they made the interstates, you know? And so the town, all the people in there, they remember its heyday, but now it's just kind of podunk Hickland and Lightning Queen's stuck there. And he's like, what the hell? But
I'll admit, I've never actually seen Cars.
What? All right. It's not the best Pixar movie. Fine. Whatever. But it's actually kind of funny.
I've not intentionally not watched it. I just I've never seen that one.
All right. Fine. All right. Well, then, then whatever. Anyways, I think it's somewhat close to what you're saying. So if that helps everybody, back in its heyday, Route 66, all those towns on it. You can think about it now. There's towns that were on Route 66 that were booming in the 50s and 60s, and now they're ghost towns.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could do that with, gold mining towns or something. I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
You could do that with lots of stuff. I guess current day, you could do that with steel towns.
Yeah. Yeah. Times are always changing. And we all know places like this are this kind of twilight, but
this one, I guess Tolkien offered the best example was Byzantium. So that's the Constantinople in the Eastern Roman Empire, that survived the whole Middle Ages. Some people mark the end of the Middle Ages in 1453 when Constantinople was conquered by the Turks and renamed Istanbul. They just say that's when it was over and the Renaissance starts, So that was such a big deal, And that really was the slow decay, what Faramir's talking about with Gondor, where it's just it's slowly all the enemies are building up. We ourselves are becoming, what did he say here? We can actually get into it a little bit here, springless autumn. Gondor caused its own decay, there's other forces and stuff, but, it rotted from inside as well. Mm-hmm. Tombs more splendid than the houses of the living. Childless rulers looking at heraldry, as in, they're studying their ancestors, even though they don't have heirs themselves. That's a problem. They're studying stars, and I don't think he quite said it, but that means, as opposed to focusing on problems on the ground, that you can actually intervene in. You can't do anything about the stars. You can just watch them, Gondor became a middleman of the twilight, right? You know, so like they were this high people, this high men, because they had dwelt in the west in Numenor. Mm-hmm. But now they come back.
Meaning most like elves, sort of. They were within sight of Valinor.
Yeah, and then they came back, and so it's like they interacted with Rohan, became their best friend, and they made Rohan a more higher people. But as they intermingled with them, they also became a lesser people, like a more middle people, you know, like a more average kind of man, you know, mm-hmm. like not wicked, low, evil man, mm-hmm. but, you know, just kind of the average, you know, normal, right?
Yeah, and a big notable part of that is becoming more middle, and like Rohan, they start to love war and valor for the sake of war and valor, not because, not as a necessary, well, exactly as he says it, basically as a means to an end, and an end into themselves, not as a means to an end. Sorry, I totally jumbled that. Point being, previously the suggestion is that the Numenoreans and the old way of Gondor was that violence and fighting was only a means to an end, and only a way to achieve what needed to be achieved, but never something to relish. And now they're starting to relish it a little bit. And it's like, that's a shame, but such are the times that we're in.
And he doesn't say this to knock him or be malicious or anything, but the prime example of, you know, that valor for its own sake, I mean, that's Boromir, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Boromir is a prime example. And of course, not coincidentally, this comes when they're no longer friends with the elves. I mean, the Numenoreans were best buds, always interacting, working with the elves. These were the people that teamed up with Elrond and Gil-galad to defeat Sauron the first time in the Last Alliance, you know. But now it's like, remember all the way back, Boromir was scared to enter Lothlorien. Like, he mm-hmm. just heard so many wicked rumors, you know, and perilous. Right. It's a perilous journey and stuff, you know. So they were totally estranged, right? And that's just, and Faramir clearly understands that's just not good. You know, like, it sucks that this happened, you know, and he's almost like a man not of his time. You know, he's pissed that he's born in this generation as opposed to a couple thousand years earlier when it was the heyday and he would have fit right in, you know, mm-hmm. and he really would have probably actually, but. So. So we were already saying this. This reminds us of basically any encounter with the elves in the Fellowship of the Ring, right? But we kind of talked about it before, but I don't know. Why don't you just, you put it in your words. Like, what does this all add to the story whenever he does this? Like, what does this add to Lord of the Rings total? Like, why is this important to go over this kind of things? Or like, why are the feelings that we get from this even important? You know, just like anything like that. Riff on it for a little bit.
Yeah, I think that it's, on the one hand, there's just like this, you get more depth to the story when you perceive these, like, you perceive change over time, and not just a single character like Faramir, but his entire people are going through this slow change. But we're now aware of it. We weren't aware of it before. So that's more depth that we have to the story. So that's important for our understanding, and it makes them more real. And like our heart goes out to them naturally. Yeah. It's like, oh man, like they're dying. Their peoples are changing. So that's one aspect. And then another is like a related aspect is like same thing with the elves. This intense sense of the world being a different place from what it was is just like, this is another layer of that that's so pervasive in different parts of the story. Contributes, I've always felt like, just makes all of Lord of the Rings, like, it gives it this, I don't know, it's like really beautifully sad quality to it. I don't have a better way to describe it other than it's like the beautiful lighting at twilight or something like that. It's just, it's really cool, but it's so sad.
Okay, here's an interesting question. Do you find it relatable?
That is a really good question. It's both yes and no. It's relatable in like a general, like, cultural mythology sort of way. Like, I think we, from the stories that we tell each other, literature, everything, like, we understand this type of like slow, steady decline or decay. It makes sense and it resonates with us. In my own life and like from direct experience, I can't say that I like see this in the same way or feel it in the same way, even if it is happening. It's more of a distant thing, but I recognize it from other literature. And when I say mythology, not like literal, like Greek mythology or something, but more like our collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But does it feel real to you or resonant with you?
Yeah, I would say yes. So I think this, you know, and now again, I know at this point I've butchered saying that I know we've butchered this quote, but like this, this is exactly goes with like the history's one long defeat thing. Like this, uh-huh. this passage, you know, this is another one, put that under this column, right? But then, yeah, I would say so because I feel like this is just kind of probably like a, again, not that I'm an expert on any of this thing and or even that my opinion's very valid, but this does kind of feel like just the whole, you have the whole feeling and sense of modernity, you know, like that. And what's the biggest thing in modernity, at least what it seems like, what it seems and looks like to all of us, for everybody to see that lives in a Western country, is you see all these places, especially like go to Europe, like all these people, all these countries were founded on like, you know, Christian monarchies and stuff, right? And, you know, now all of those are declining. You know, if you go to Europe, they have all these beautiful, awesome ancient cathedrals and stuff, and they really can't even fill them, you know, anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like they, we're losing the roots, you know, and that's happening in America too. It's like a little bit different because we're kind of imported here in the last 200 or 300 years or something. But, and we're a mix of melting pot of everything, or ideally we're a melting pot of everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess more so coming from Europe because that's our most direct ancestors overall based on where this country came from or how it was founded. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yeah, that the roots of that seem to be lost. And that was something that, you know, the really big, huge, hugest catalyst, even though stuff was building up before, but the hugest catalyst of that was actually World War One. Like that was the event that just totally changed the direction of the 20th century, like just got off on just a horrible start. And that's what, like, you know, led to all the horrible, evil stuff that Tolkien saw his lifetime and the problems that we've had ever since, you know, I mean, we've had problems ever since World War II, and all of that's directly from World War One. And it's just like, yeah. And I mean, obviously it's not like World War One just happened in a vacuum or something, like they just decided to do that. But I mean, it's like, yeah, everything, there was stuff leading up to it. And it's like, there was a declining feeling, you know, and it's like, you just look at, you look at just stuff that's lost, and the best example in my eyes is just all the super beautiful cathedrals that you see all over Europe that every country has, and like they can't fill them up. Mm-hmm. Like they just, people just aren't going there anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, like maybe for anybody that's non-religious, like they don't care about that point or something, or like the reasoning of that's lost on them. But it's like, I don't know, that's the best way I can convey this, like how I relate to this. And that's not just like I'm sad people don't go to church anymore or something. It's like, no, we're missing something, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also fair to say that, well, maybe we're just getting older, because I don't know. We're in our mid-20s, so it's like, so who knows? We don't have that much experience in seeing like the world politics and everything. But from what everybody would say, the past 5 years, even the past 10 years, have gotten really crazy, and there's weird stuff going on, like weird problems, you know, just interesting and just very weird problems going on. And it's just like, yeah, I think it goes back to, you know, this long decaying process that it's like we're missing something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I do actually find this very relatable.
I mean, it's a great case. I think I agree. It's a powerful sentiment.
Yeah. Okay. So with that said, last thing to caveat this off with is, this is the beauty of Lord of the Rings. You can read that whole passage. You don't have to know who Kirion was. You don't have to know you know, these elder days, you don't have to know what the Numenoreans, you don't have to know who they are, you don't have to know what the three houses of men are or anything. Mm-hmm. You can read all this Anarion, you can read all of this, and you can just feel it. Even though you don't fully understand the history, you feel this, you get what he's trying to do, you know, and maybe you can't articulate it. And that's part of the reason you listen to a podcast is, like, I don't know, some other people, you know, actually take a stab at really trying to articulate this. Mm-hmm. But you get the point, and it resonates with you, most importantly of all. Now, that said, since we're doing this podcast, part of the fun of this stuff is, since Tolkien just has so much other stuff that he's written outside of Lord of the Rings, even though none of it was published, we can actually dive in to, like, this whole passage, you know, and really just expand on it with a couple special episodes. And so what I think, usually the original idea was, in between each book, we would do it like one special episode that's just, you know, in between all of them. Like, what'd we do? We did the Music of the Ainur special between book one and two, so in between the Fellowship, you know. After the Fellowship, we did the Philology special. Halfway through, between book three and book four, we did the Fëanor special. This one, my original idea was, well, we have to cover Numenor. We have to cover the fall of Numenor. But I was looking at it, and it's like, all right, that's a really big special. That'd be really big to do. To do it just one shot, that's really big. So, mm-hmm. So I'm not sure about that. So what I was thinking was, I have another really fun special that I'm, like, so looking forward to. It's the episode I'm looking forward to most, but I'm not going to reveal what that is tonight. Clifford, I think you already know. But that one's coming out in March. Get ready. That one's so exciting. Maybe this comes out in March, whatever. Then maybe the episode's out by now. But, oh my gosh, am I excited for this one. Anyways, what we're going to do is, I propose we do a mini season, short mini season, in between, you know, before we start Return of the King. So that when, in the first chapter of Return of the King, to spoil it a little bit, it's called Minas Tirith. I wonder where we're at in that chapter. So that's the big grand reveal. If you've seen the movies, you know how awesome it is, like the reveal of that place and stuff. It's like, again, you could just read the book and you can appreciate that without knowing all the backstory. But if you're listening to this podcast, you probably want the backstory. Thus, we're going to give it to you, and we're going to prepare correctly for this. Like, as best we can, we're going to prepare for this. So what I propose we do is we do a couple episodes. And so the thread of this is that they're all about men. We've done all the Silmarillion stuff about elves and everything, and we've done a couple of select stories about men, like Beren, right? But what I would propose is, let's do these three houses that he mentioned. You know, who are these houses? And it's, to give the spoiler, Beren's house, Húrin's house, and then there's that other one that Túrin visited in Brethil. If that helps you guys. So anyways, what I propose for that one is, we'll do the coming of men to Beleriand, but that in itself probably isn't, there's not too much substance there, but mm-hmm. there's a really cool conversation that everybody, all the Tolkien nerds know, between Finrod, who's one of the Noldor, he was the one that helped Beren, and this woman, like mortal woman, so man, you know, called Andreth, and they have this conversation, and this was actually, like, by this point, though, we've done that orc conversation about souls, that this starts to talk about elves versus men, like the morality, or I mean the immortality and stuff, and it's like how are they supposed to deal with that, and it's really cool. It's a pretty short read, so I think that'd be, it's hard to pass that up, is what I would say, you know.
Okay.
Next one, and this could be ambitious, but I would say we have to do Numenor. If we have to break it in two or something, we'll do that. But we got to do, all right, what the hell is Numenor? We keep hearing about it. We know it's an island. Tell us more, right? You know, like, and that's a logical question, because not only Gondor, but Arnor in the north comes out of it. You know, like, these are Aragorn's people and you know, Faramir and Boromir's people and stuff. It's like, how did they get here? You know, we know they helped fight in the Last Alliance, but it's like, how did they get there? And where is Numenor now? You know, like, apparently it's gone. How did it end? You know, I mean, there's Tolkien, you know, he spends a whole section of the Silmarillion devoted to that. It's like, dude, I don't know how we can do a Tolkien podcast and not cover that story, you know? And I feel like this would be the proper time as we approach, you know, we've gotten a taste of Gondor from Faramir, but we haven't seen it, but we will see it in Return of the King. And so it's like, I think this is the proper time. Additionally, after that, Numenor falls, Last Alliance happens, but in between the Last Alliance, when Isildur cuts the ring and Lord of the Rings, there's still 3,000 years. Right, so what if we just did another brief, well, we'll try to be as brief as we can, episode to catch up the history of Gondor and the other mysterious northern kingdom of Arnor, which is where Aragorn's, you know, ancestors lived, because, you know, the rangers come from there. It's like, how did they get there? What happened to this place, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's some good material that we could cover there. That could be an episode. And then finally, this one I did actually think about just putting in the middle of Return of the King, but we'll just add it to this thing, I think, because it would just be easiest, is how did Gondor and Rohan become friends? Faramir was talking about this Kirion guy, the 12th steward, you know, Field of Celebrand, you know, that's where the Rohirrim showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's writings on that, man. We can cover that.
Okay.
And it's actually a really fun story too. So that's what I would propose we do as the interim setup for Return of the King. And once we have that under our belt, then it's just like, oh yeah, when we get into Return of the King, we're rolling. It's going to be awesome. What do you think, Clifford?
I'm ready. I don't even know how many specials you listed off right then.
Ideally 4, probably it turns into 5.
Okay. I'm ready and I'm excited.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, yeah, so this was short, thankfully. So, if you don't have anything else to say, that's about all I got for this one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right, well then, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be rolling then with this special mini season, you know, to get ready for Return of the King. And then, man, once we hit Return of the King, see, it doesn't quite feel like we got to Return of the King yet, because we didn't, because I just added this whole thing. But, man, once we get to Return of the King, that's going to be a pretty special moment just to get there.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think this has been good. And, yeah, I'm pretty excited for what we can do with this. Should be some quality episodes, especially stuff that, like, maybe people don't know, definitely don't know as well, but, you know, maybe even have no experience with. So get ready. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep. Stay tuned. Thanks, y'all.